This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We are also now available on podcast on iTunes. Simply go to the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And there are now more ways to stay in touch with the union. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can visit us at dc37.net. And every month, you can check your mailbox, union members, for your union newspaper, the Public Employee Press. On November 7th, voters are going to be asked whether or not they support the idea of a constitutional convention in New York State. This is a topic that we've talked about before on this show. We're going to talk about it some more this evening. And I wanted to start off by focusing. I want to focus on this show. Opponents of the convention, of which DC 37 is one of the opponents of the convention, say that the potential benefit of a convention is outweighed by the danger that big money conservative anti-union, anti-worker, anti-progressive forces could alter the Constitution on any number of issues, including worker rights. And what is meant by that, and who those big money anti-worker forces are, is the topic of this show this evening. Joining us is Jane Carter. She is a labor economist for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, our national union in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to the show, Jane.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I want to read you something, and I want to get your reaction to something. This is from a story in Newsday that appeared a few days ago in New York. It said, big money donors who could influence a convention are a concern for the opponents of the convention. And the donors include the Robert Mercer family from Long Island. Two members of the billionaire's families are top officers in the four-year-old government advocacy group called Reclaim New York. And Reclaim New York, now listen to this. The paper describes Reclaim New York as an organization created to focus on taxes and government transparency. And they said they're staying out of direct involvement in the current issue about having it, whether or not to hold a convention. But the communications director of Reclaim New York said, we will look at this in November afterward. It's something we definitely will have an eye on. That's where we could be more of a presence if, in fact, the convention was voted up. Now, when they say that Reclaim New York is an organization focused on taxes and government transparency, they're saying two things. One, that it is an organization focused on lowering taxes for the rich. And government transparency really is shrinking the heck out of government and public services. How far off am I?
Oh, I think you're spot on. Absolutely.
Okay, there I go. I win. Let's talk about who is the Mercer Family Foundation and who are these groups. When we talk about dark money and big money, deep-pocketed anti-worker forces, who are we talking about?
Well, so the Mercer family is a bit different than the usual kind of big dark money donors that we see. Dark money typically is it's not untraceable money, but it's usually spent by foundations like you have Donors Trust or the Bradley Foundation, or like you guys in New York, you have the New York or the Mercer Family Foundation, and it's. Since they're charitable organizations, they are listed as a 501c3 under the IRS code.
Charitable.
So they're a charity. They're charity, right?
Yes,
and
okay.
So they file tax returns the same way we do, but they also will fund things like Take Back or Reclaim New York or the State Policy Network. Like in New York, you have the Empire Center and the Manhattan Institute. Those are also 501c3 charitable organizations. And so it's money that they spend back and forth and fund these initiatives where you have a tax on pensions and experts testifying from the Empire Center or Manhattan Institute. And those experts are fully funded by families like the Mercer family, what makes this money and donations dark is because it's transferred, you know, from a charity to a charity. So it never shows up on an ethics report or a campaign finance report. It's just one, it's like the Red Cross giving to you know, Big Brothers Big Sisters or something. So it's dark money in the sense that there's no limits on it. And it's not traceable until those 990s are published by GuideStar the following year. So in any campaign year, you'll have this money kind of flowing from, like, the Mercer family or, you know, even sometimes the Koch, often the Koch family, and into organizations like Reclaim New York. And we won't know how much is actually spent until that following April after taxes are filed.
Now, when we talk about charity, these folks aren't feeding the poor.
These folks
are fighting for policies that are often in the, you know, opposed to the interests of working families across the country, of whom we represent, right? And these folks have a very clear agenda. Talk to me a little bit about what the agenda is.
Well, I think, I mean, even if you just look at the states where we've seen a lot of dark money spent, Wisconsin, the Bradley Foundation there spent millions of dollars. In fact, it was revealed a few months ago that for the last 9 years, they've spent $35 million specifically funding organizations, State Policy Network affiliates, to go after unions and to bust up unions. Wisconsin, you know, we had our collective bargaining laws completely gutted and dismantled, and the folks that would testify in favor of right to work came from the State Policy Network affiliate in Wisconsin. In Illinois, we've got the Janus case, and the folks really pushing Janus and funding it are the Illinois Policy Institute. And the Illinois Policy Institute is a State Policy Network affiliate. So it's affiliated with the Empire Center and the Manhattan Institute. And they got actually, IPI in Illinois has got a ton of money from the Mercer family. And they're the ones pushing Janus and Right to Work in Illinois.
Janus being the case against public employee.
The Supreme Court case.
Which threatens to silence workers' voice across the country. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of Janus, then the entire nation is right to work.
For public sector, yes.
For public sector employees. And as we know, right to... I mean, the title of this show is Connect the Dots. And the subtitle of this show is Just Because You're Paranoid Doesn't Mean They're Not Out to Get You, right?
I mean, they're absolutely... I mean, I do workshops all over the country, and I always tell people it's okay. You know, there's been a concerted attack for the last 30, 40 years to dismantle labor unions, because unions, it's not that they hate us. And, you know, I will say that there are organizations out there that do not like public employees and think things should be privatized. But the attack on labor unions and collective bargaining is because labor is the last, you know, defender of the middle class. And we, you know, it's our job to educate our members to fight like hell to make sure we get good wages, decent benefits, and good working conditions. And when you have big, you know, rich people who own companies or want, you know, tax breaks, we're the ones calling them out. So the easiest for them to get away with this is to get rid of us. So, I mean, there's been an attack for 40 years, specifically going after unions.
And this attack, I mean, again, we're trying to tell the story here of, you know, it starts with why are we opposed to a constitutional convention? And to do that, you have to get back to this idea that everything is connected, that there has been 40 years of attacks on the labor movement and on working families. There are now 28 states across the nation that are right to work. Everywhere where there are right to work laws, wages are lower. Workers have less voice. The quality of life for workers is less. They don't have the same benefits or retirement security, and that there is a movement afoot to increase the number of right to work states. There are folks who don't believe in public services and believe that you can privatize everything. Life will be better, despite the fact that wherever we see privatized public services, companies get richer and the public suffers. And there is a network of groups that you have been focusing on like a laser for the past few years, on that, you know, these folks are talking to each other, they're supporting each other, and there is a thing called the States Policy Network, which has actually been working with, remind me the group, ALEC is the group,
right?
That...
The American Legislative Exchange Council.
And they actually write legislation for legislatures out in Wisconsin and other places across the country, right?
I mean, every single state. So they're active in every single state in the country.
So again, tell us again, what is the state's policy network?
So the SPN, State Policy Network, is a national organization that has state-based affiliates in every single state. They have 63 direct affiliate members. And the easiest way to kind of explain it is they're a lot like AFSCME, where we have a national union and we have affiliates in every state. SPN is structured very similarly to that, but we operate much different, and our beliefs are obviously much different as well. In some states have more than one affiliate member, but they also have associate members, and there's more than 200 total members of State Policy Network. So they share information, they share scholars. And so if something was, if a legislator, if a bill was introduced in Kentucky and it passed, that State Policy Network affiliate member will send their quote-unquote scholars around the country and push this similar legislation or work with that other state's associate member or affiliate member to get that same legislation passed. I mean, they share data, they share information, they share resources, and it's heavily funded. State Policy Network operates about, on a national level, a $65 million budget, and it's also, just so you know, State Policy Network and its affiliates are also 501c3 charitable organizations as well.
So you tell us all this because what amazes me is the fraudulence of it. The idea that this is the agenda. The agenda is heavily anti-worker. The agenda is pro-tax cuts for the rich. The agenda is everything that pushes the inequality situation that now exists. They live to exacerbate that problem because they think it's good for their constituents.
Absolutely. Well, and it's interesting. I like to go back to talk about the Reclaim New York with the money and the funding. Now, Reclaim New York is not an affiliate or an associate member of State Policy Network. And the reason they're not getting involved in the election that's coming up to, vote up or down on the Constitutional Convention in New York is because as a charity, they really can't get involved in an election. But what they can do behind the scenes is dictate what would go in and be decided in that convention. So that's why we see a lot of dark money going into New York at the moment to fund it, thinking it will pass. And then if voters pass it and you've got elected delegates at this convention, it's a free-for-all. And in New York, our pensions are protected by the Constitution. So they can open up and do whatever they want. And so in my mind, it's kind of like their dream come true if the voters pass, to open up the Constitution in New York, and it just becomes a free-for-all. And Reclaim New York will not be the only organization pushing to slash pensions or to come after working families and to go after taxes and to slash government and public sector services. It'll be them and a few other folks heavily funded to pushing their own agenda from basically funded by billionaires.
We're talking with Jane Carter. She's a labor economist for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, which is the District Council 37 National Union. When you go across the country, as I know you do, talking to folks about these organizations, what their agendas are, how they are all connected, how it's part of the, people talk and say about unions all the time, you're fighting a class war. You're fighting a class war. And I always remember the words of Warren Buffett, who said, there is a class war, all right, but it's my side, the rich side, that's fighting the war, and we're winning. When you go out to talk to our members across the country about this, what is the response that you get to when folks learn about how connected everything is here?
Well, I think it's twofold. Members are very well aware that things have gotten harder for them to do their jobs. Our AFSCME members across the country do their jobs because they love it. I mean, these are not typically the highest paid jobs, but it's dedication. It's a lot of work, and they love what they do. They take care of our communities. It's in do jobs that affect every single person who every one of our neighbors, and so they know how it's gotten bad, from when they first started 5, 10, 15 years ago, where it's the employer isn't properly staffing, or we are facing privatization, or programs aren't actually funded, and then we're facing, you know, no raises at all for multiple years. So you have that typical attack coming from the employer, but their neighbors are also saying, picking up this right-wing rhetoric that we shouldn't have pensions either. And so there's been a shift, and they are very well aware that that's happened. And so the first instinct that they have is, thank you for opening our eyes and showing us that I'm not crazy. There is something going on. And two, they usually get really angry to know that it's a billionaire, a charitable organization is coming after them and their jobs simply because someone else wants to make even more money than they do have.
And you mentioned pensions, and yes, we are fighting in this case to protect our pensions in this constitutional convention vote. But let's remind folks that the average AFSCME pension is $19,000 a year. So we are not talking about something that is exorbitant per AFSCME member. And B, we have been fighting for years now, asking folks who resent, especially folks from the private sector who resent the fact that public employees have pensions, we're saying we should be fighting for you to get your pensions back because you lost your pensions.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely, yes. You know, in the height of the recession in 2009, 2010, the average 55-year-old's 401k, if you had folks who'd lost their pensions and then shifted to a 401k system, when the recession hit, it wiped out the stock market, which meant it affected everyone's 401k. And the average 55-year-old's pension was worth less than $110,000. That's not going to last you the rest of your life. You're not going to be able to retire on that whatsoever.
And the other thing, of course, is that pensions aren't free.
Absolutely not.
Members pay, put in for their pensions.
It's typically the members, a worker has to pay from day one of starting service with the employer. And typically the employer will pay into a certain amount, based off of the actuary's recommendation. But the biggest earner of a pension is actually what they gain, as a collective in its own investments. And our workers, our members, and even non-members who have pensions, they pay in every single paycheck. When the economy was really booming in the early 2000s, right before the recession hit, states and local governments across this country stopped paying those pension payments. And so even though they stopped, we paid every single time.
And this is going on across the country. I wanted to have this conversation because we got a minute and a half left. I wanted to have this conversation because this idea that people who didn't know, when you talk about these big, powerful, deep-pocketed forces out there, who are you talking about? This is who we're talking about. These are the folks who are influencing policy across states, and a constitutional convention here in New York is not the right, it's not the right time, it's not the right thing.
Well, and these people who are funding it, it is, everyone knows the Koch brothers. I always say the only reason you know about them is because they're vain and they like to be the big dogs on campus, so to speak. But it's folks like the Mercer family or the DeVos family out of Michigan. You also have the Walton family, the Walmart family. You have the Castle Rock and Coors Family Foundation. The Bradley Foundation is two dead brothers, and it's their legacy continues through the money that they left into the foundation itself. And so you have like these big billionaires all over the country that have moved their money into these foundations to help fund everything, these attacks on workers in every single state. And it's dark money because it's not traceable until the following year. And they don't have to do any, they don't have to reveal their donors, and they don't have to reveal, they don't have to abide by any of the caps or spent by campaign finance laws.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much. Jane Carter, labor economist from AFSCME, thanks very much for coming on the show and helping explain the world to us.
Thanks, Chris.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. We are talking now with Robert Martin, who is the Associate Director of the Municipal Employee Legal Services of DC 37. We're talking about the Equifax security breach. And welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hello, Chris.
What happened with this Equifax thing? Why is it important to our members? What do they need to know about the security breach, and what can be, should they be doing? How's that for?
Chris, what happened is that Equifax, which is one of the three, the big three credit reporting agencies, is that they were hacked. And it is probably the biggest security breach like this comes in, you know, after a number of others, publicized breaches. This is probably the largest. And it's a little bit different because the hack wasn't just as some the credit card numbers, but also 143 million adults, that's over half the people in the U.S. that have a credit report. Their Social Security numbers and birth dates were hacked and could potentially be used to open up fake accounts and file tax returns, et cetera, et cetera. And it's particularly troubling, I have to throw this in, because Equifax is one of the agencies that people rely on and depend upon to protect their data. And so instead, they apparently or obviously didn't have sufficient controls in place.
And I just want to throw this out gratuitously that, and it's not gratuitous, it's actually the president's been fired and he gets to go away with a $90 million parachute, is my understanding. I saw that number and it sort of freaked me out. So what are we doing about this, or what can we do about this?
Well, and I'll talk in a minute, if we have a moment, about what some of the regulatory people are doing, and the New York authorities have announced what they want to do. But probably I should probably say just a word about what individual consumers and our members can do. And partly it depends on personal preference, because there's some different choices that people should make, and people should look on the DC 37 website for a blog piece on this topic. And there's a lot of good groups out there that have information that people can educate themselves with. But in brief, people can subscribe to Equifax's so-called monitoring service. I wouldn't encourage people to do that at this point, because it's kind of it's an after the fact thing. It will tell you if someone has opened an account or if your credit report has been affected. But people can do that on their own by going on to annualcreditreport.com and regularly checking their credit report, and by monitoring their bank accounts and their credit card accounts. Another thing that people can do is place a fraud alert on their accounts, which makes it harder for anyone to get credit in your name. There are steps that a credit card company, a car dealer, would have to go through before giving out credit.
Robert, you can do that without having actually, because this thing has happened, you can now go and ask someone to put a fraud alert on your account. Nothing has to have happened to you specifically.
That's right.
Okay.
Good question. The answer is you can do it, as a matter of course. A fraud alert, and you need to do it for each of the three credit reporting agencies, is only good for 90 days, but you can renew it. And then the final step that some people may want to take is to place a security freeze on their account. And what that does, it freezes your account. No one can give credit in your name unless you unfreeze the account. And it's slightly complicated, but it has become easier these days to place a freeze on your account. So if you're not applying for credit anytime soon, or you don't apply for credit very often, that's a very reasonable step. It gives you the highest level of protection. And in New York, the first freeze that you place is free by New York law. And then to unfreeze the account, it's $5. And to freeze it again, it's another $5. But that's also a very reasonable choice that, that people can make. I hope I've briefly covered the choices.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes. I'm not doing this. Maybe we're doing a disservice to this, but I wanted to get in what's going on because I thought it was important to talk to members about this. What is being done from a policy point of view? And I've only got 2 minutes to talk about.
Well, everyone is up in arms nationally, and then among the states. And in the era of Trump, it's important for the states that can do it to step in and pass good regulations. In New York, the Department of Financial Services and the governor have announced a proposed regulation that would really make it to tighten things up and force Equifax to tighten up their operation. And that seems to be a good regulation, and it'll play itself out over the coming months. But that's what the Department of Financial Services almost immediately announced what they will do. And we can all only hope that at the national level that there will be a bigger look taken at these big agencies who are money-making operations. They are there to make money, and part of the reason why people are outraged is that what happened after the breach is that Equifax, it looked like they were covering their you know what, because
right.
They didn't tell people immediately. Some of their executives sold off stock. Even the one who got fired, as you say, got a golden parachute, and they just did some other things that made people say what is really going on here, and who's in control of all our data? Is it this private money making operation, or is the public going to have some level of satisfaction that their interests are being protected?
Robert Martin is the associate director of DC-37's Municipal Employee Legal Services. Sir, thanks for coming on and telling us about this, and you will be back on our show.
Stay tuned. Thanks, Chris.
Take care. That's about all the time we have for this week's show. A couple of announcements before we go. The DC-37 Organizing Department continues to hold lunchtime meetings at various sites and on various dates across the city. To find out more information about attending a meeting, please call the organizing department at 212-815-1095. The election is November 7th. We need volunteers to help us get out the vote. Please call the political action department at 212-815-1550. Remember to get out and vote on November 7th. Also, the Municipal Employees Legal Services Department reminds you that they provide legal representation to members when applying for citizenship. For more information, call 212-815-1818. I want to thank Jane Carter of AFSCME and Robert Martin of the DC-37 Mels Department for talking to us today. I also want to tell you that Andrea Minocchio is the engineer. Rudy Orozco is the producer. I'm Chris Policano. Till next time, ciao.